The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jory Slodke for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Discover. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the January-February 2022 issue. We continue with our cover feature, The State of Science. New rovers chase life on Mars. The red planet bustles with robots as two new rovers, a helicopter and a satellite, set out to search for signs of ancient life. Humans have wondered if there's ever been life on Mars for as long as we've known it's a planet. We could soon have an answer. In February, NASA landed its Mars Perseverance rover, along with a companion helicopter, the Intrepid Ingenuity, in an ancient river delta called Jezero Crater. The NASA mission, dubbed Mars 2020, was designed to search for signs of ancient life and collect drilling samples to return to Earth for deeper analysis. For the first time, we are actually going to bring back cores from Mars to Earth, says Vandy Verma, chief engineer of robotic operations for the mission. Along the way, Perseverance will also lay the groundwork for future human missions by studying environmental conditions, identifying resources like water, and testing a method for making oxygen. Perseverance wasn't the only spacecraft to make the trip in 2021 either. Not long after Perseverance landed, a Chinese rover named Zhurong also touched down on Mars. Like NASA's rover, it was designed to find evidence of ancient life and prepare for future sample retrieval. A United Arab Emirates orbiting spacecraft called Hope also arrived to make similar studies, as Earth's space agencies took advantage of a relatively close red planet approach. Perseverance builds on the legacy of its six-wheeled predecessors, which have shown that Mars was once a wet and habitable planet. Now astronomers hope to find out whether it was ever actually inhabited. The new rover's tantalizing landing site and advanced instruments offer the best hope yet for a conclusive answer. The story of the landing site, Jezero Crater, starts roughly 4 billion years ago, when Mars was much warmer and wetter, and life was just taking hold on Earth. An enormous space rock struck just north of the equator and formed an impact basin some 750 miles wide. Eventually, a smaller asteroid smashed another hole in the area, churning up a unique mix of rocks and sediments. Rivers in the region soon flowed into Jezero Crater, delivering rich sediment and creating a lake more than a quarter mile deep and twice the width of Lake Tahoe. The wetland may have been an ideal place for life to evolve on Mars, which is why NASA chose Jezero Crater to search for signs of life. But that same geological history also carried risk to the mission. From an engineering standpoint, Jezero Crater was the most hazardous landing site of the five or six candidates that they picked, says JPL engineer Andrew Johnson, who helped oversee the landing. There's all these heinous boulders. That's why NASA made significant engineering improvements to Mars 2020's navigation systems. Newly designed systems let the spacecraft see the surface during a descent, calculate its exact position, and course correct towards a tightly constrained landing site. Elsewhere, upgrades to the rover's autonomous driving program also let the robot travel faster than ever before. On a daily basis, Perseverance will cover about as much ground as the Mars rover single-day record, about two football fields. We can land in terrain that would have been considered too hazardous on previous missions, says Verma, who also drives Perseverance. Now we can get to the scientifically interesting terrain much more quickly. The new rover arrived amid abundant intrigue over whether life exists on Mars today, not just in the ancient past. NASA's Curiosity rover discovered clear signs of methane gas during its long, slow drive up 3.4-mile-tall Mount Sharp. Microbes create much of Earth's methane, but geologic processes can make it too. By 2018, Curiosity had repeatedly seen methane levels rise in Martian summer, then drop off in winter. Yet due to limitations in technology used to detect methane, scientists still debate its very existence on Mars. The Curiosity rover is still active, and it continues to watch for methane. However, Perseverance is taking a more direct approach to the search for microbial action. The rover's life-hunting abilities come thanks to a robotic arm designed specifically to study rock surfaces, and another instrument that gives NASA an up-close look at rock textures. These instruments, dubbed Sherlock and Watson, are mapping materials and organic molecules on rocks that Perseverance finds along its journey. Any interesting samples get a more in-depth analysis using the suite of instruments in the rover's mobile lab. For example, a group of organic molecules clumped together in a rock might hint that life once existed there. Other interesting indicators of the former environment, like hints of ancient salt water, might also pique scientists' interests. Perseverance also doesn't need to directly discover evidence of life. The robot is gathering surface samples all across Jezero Crater, which will eventually be studied with more sophisticated tools back on Earth, where precise dating is possible. Space agencies have sampled comets, asteroids, and the moon, but no mission has ever collected surface samples from another planet. However, depending on its timing, NASA won't necessarily be the first to accomplish the feat. China has similar aims with its Tianwen-1 spacecraft and Zhurong rover, the first non-NASA lander to successfully operate on Mars. The rover landed in Mars's largest impact basin, Utopia Planitia, which holds a subsurface lake larger than New Mexico. China's space agency is searching the region for signs of life. Engineers from NASA and the European Space Agency are already designing their Fetch rover to speed across Jezero Crater, collecting Perseverance's samples, as well as a spacecraft to launch them into orbit. They should reach Mars in the late 2020s. We will be studying these samples for decades to come, like how we still conduct studies on samples we got back from the moon, Verma says. Scientists who haven't been born yet will be studying these samples using technologies that haven't been invented yet. NASA also sent Perseverance with a robotic stowaway. Tucked beneath the rover was a small, solar-powered helicopter called Ingenuity. And as the rover gained its footing, mission engineers took their new drone for a series of test flights, giving humanity its first Wright Brothers moment in the thin Martian air. The helicopter was drawn up as a low-cost technology demonstrator whose prime mission was just three flights. Instead, Ingenuity drastically outperformed expectations, and when the rover set out to explore the River Delta, its new drone sidekick left with it. The scouting flights, each spanning mere minutes, quickly proved valuable, especially in terms of assessing terrain to speed the rover's course, and adding new perspectives for scientists to make sense of on-the-ground discoveries. Now that Ingenuity has shown itself capable, mission engineers suspect the drone could become a long-term travel partner for Perseverance. "I don't bet against our robots," Verma says. "I would love to see the helicopter come with us all the way to the Jezero Delta, but we take it one day at a time." The death of climate denial? Data and extreme weather events are making it harder than ever to ignore our warming world. From brutal heat in North America and Siberia to devastating flooding in China and Europe, 2021 delivered worsening climate extremes of the kind long predicted by scientists. streetcar cables melted in Portland. A raging river swept away entire homes in Germany's lush Ahr Valley wine region. And wildfires have set records across the globe in the past 2 years. For many people, recent disasters have transformed human-caused climate change from a theoretical far-off risk to an undeniable reality. And this summer, the United Nations dropped a landmark climate report, emphasizing that avoiding even worse impacts will require deep, rapid cuts in greenhouse gas pollution. But does that mean 2021 will be remembered as the year denial of climate change all but died? At least one renowned environmentalist scientist believes so. "I think you have seen a seismic shift," says Jonathan Foley, executive director of Project Drawdown, a nonprofit that advances climate solutions. "Most of the conversation now is really more about what we should do, not denying whether or not climate change is happening." Other experts don't go as far, saying denialism may be waning, but it's not dead. They also warn that promoters of climate denial now emphasize delaying action. That said, even Harvard University science historian Naomi Oreskes, co-author of Merchants of Doubt, thinks something has shifted. Her 2010 book documented how politically motivated scientists teamed with corporate and other interests to cast doubt on the science of many issues, starting with tobacco and leading to global warming. Now, years later, she says, this is a glass half full, half empty problem. There are certainly a lot of things to feel good about. Surveys show rising alarm about climate change. In a 2021 poll by George Mason and Yale Universities, 70% of Americans surveyed said they were worried about global warming. A similar poll also showed growing bipartisan support for climate action, with 6 in 10 voters voicing support for ambitious climate and clean energy infrastructure legislation. "I do think our country and world have changed in important ways," says Edward Maybach, director of the Center for Climate Change Communication at George Mason University. "We're now in an inevitable transition to an economy in which we are no longer emitting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere." The shift may not be surprising given the clear rise in weather and climate extremes documented by the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, report. In 2021, we saw heat waves, like the shattering of high temperature records in June on the Pacific coast of the U.S. and Canada. July brought torrential rains in Western Europe. Deluges followed in China's Henan province, where half its average annual precipitation fell in just 6 hours, triggering flooding that killed more than 300 people. And the Western U.S. has seen a profound increase in wildfire activity, a point driven home by multiple 2021 megafires of 100,000 acres and greater. As Foley puts it, denial of the basic reality of climate change is no longer credible. But what was denialism about in the first place? The answer offers insights into an era of delayed action that may be the new zeitgeist. Catherine Hayo, an atmospheric researcher and chief scientist for the Nature Conservancy, argues that most people who dismiss climate change aren't really denying its basic facts. Rather, they fear solutions pose more risks to them, to their finances and lifestyles, for example, than climate change itself. But instead of admitting that, people grasp at the straws of denial offered by the merchants of doubt. Hayo believes that it's changing. "There are some very large see-through holes in that smokescreen of denial today," she says. "With record-breaking heat in June rather than July or August, with rising sea levels, people can see with their own eyes that now something is happening where they live." Surveys support her view. Maybach notes that when his center began polling in 2008, a majority of Americans surveyed did believe the climate was changing, but saw it as a distant threat. Half now see climate change as a clear and present danger in their own communities, he says. But many industries still oppose meaningful climate action and are trying to delay it while shifting blame from corporations to individuals, argues Penn State climate scientist Michael Mann in his 2021 book, The New Climate War. To delay action, corporate interests and their supporters in government have executed what he calls a deflection campaign. They place the responsibilities for battling climate change on consumers, insisting that they must change their behavior. Does this mean we've transitioned from denialism to delayism? Oreske sees no distinction. Delay is denial because the scientific evidence is overwhelming that we have to act now, she says. It's all a package, and it all has the same purpose, which is to keep us using fossil fuels. Foley expresses similar concerns. I think we're entering a new age of subterfuge, he says. Fossil fuel companies are trying to look like they support action on climate change, he adds, while they are just doing business as usual. At the same time, greenhouse gas emissions have peaked in roughly 50 countries and are now going down, according to Foley. In the U.S., emissions have dropped by roughly 20% since 2007. That's pretty good news, he says. Not good enough, but at least we're bending the curve in the right direction. Without even faster and deeper cuts, though, future impacts could make 2021's heat waves, wildfires, and deluges look tame. The fight against microplastics. Researchers continue to grapple with the reality of tiny plastic shards everywhere. Concerns about microplastics are not new. They've been growing for more than a decade. Over the past 2 years, however, many creative solutions have emerged to address the problem on a local level, ranging from hoovering beaches to shooting bubbles up from river bottoms. Still, experts say that there's a need for a huge, coordinated effort if we want to curb the global issue. The world produces 400 million tons of plastic annually, and much of that material breaks down into tiny pieces that now litter our planet. The term microplastics was coined in 2004 by marine ecologist Richard Thompson after he discovered tiny bits of plastic littering British beaches. Since then, scientists have found microplastics, fragments less than 5 millimeters wide, nearly everywhere. In the deep sea, in the Arctic ice, in the air, even inside us. A 2019 study in Environmental Science and Technology estimated humans ingest up to 100,000 bits of plastic each day. It's not just the physical presence of plastic inside the body that poses a potential problem. Plastic's chemical additives might affect different species' tissues and organs, according to a 2021 study in Environmental Technology and Chemistry. However, there's disagreement in the literature as to how much microplastics harm species, including humans. Some say larger specks may pass right through our bodies, while the tiniest pieces could enter our cells. More research is needed. For a global view of this vast issue, Duke University scientists in 2020 created a public database to track plastic removal innovations. For example, the Hula One is a rugged terrain vacuum that internally separates microplastics from organic materials. It's being tested on Hawaiian beaches. In Amsterdam, scientists have introduced the bubble barrier in canals, a device that forces air through a perforated tube, creating a wall of bubbles to send submerged plastic to the surface. Hong Kong Polytechnic University researchers presented a unique idea in April at the Microbiology Society's annual conference. A bacteria biofilm that could attract and trap microplastics at a wastewater treatment plant before they flow into rivers and oceans. An international research collaboration is working on something similar using jellyfish slime. This wide range of measures could help in specific pollution hotspots, says Zoe Diana, a Duke doctoral candidate who worked on the inventory and added 40 new inventions this year. But if you have a technology that would recapture plastic, microplastics at the industrial wastewater scale before they enter our waterways, that would be ideal, Diana says. That's where Elaine Marty, chief scientist at the biochemistry startup Carbios, comes to the picture. In a 2020 Nature article, Marty and colleagues describe how they engineered an enzyme to break down plastic quickly and efficiently. Industries could employ the enzyme as part of their manufacturing process so that nearly all of their material could be reused to create products. If waste has a value, then it becomes a product, he says. And once a product, it will be collected and no longer pollute our oceans and our environment. Marty's discovery is a breakthrough in the right direction, though preventing microplastics by reducing our plastic use is just as important, says Diana. We really want to turn off the tap. How will life on Earth end? Asteroid strikes, supernova blasts, and other calamities that could take out humanity. Life is resilient. The first living things on Earth appeared as far back as 4 billion years ago, according to some scientists. Throughout Earth's history, it's seen all manner of cataclysms. These disparate doomsdays have killed countless life forms. And at times, those mass extinctions have even eliminated most species on Earth. Yet life has always rebounded. New species emerge. The cycle repeats. So, what would it take to kill off life in full? Here are just a few possible doomsday events that could permanently extinguish all life on Earth. And at least one is likely unavoidable. Asteroid impact apocalypse. When a city-sized asteroid struck the Gulf of Mexico 66 million years ago, it was game over for the dinosaurs, as well as most other species on Earth at the time. A future asteroid could just as easily take out every person on Earth. Fortunately, that's unlikely to happen anytime soon. Based on the geological record of cosmic impacts, Earth gets hit by a large asteroid roughly every 100 million years, according to NASA. However, smaller asteroid impacts do happen all the time. There's even evidence that some people may have been killed by small meteorite impacts within the last few thousand years. But what are the chances that our planet will ever be struck by an asteroid massive enough to wipe out all life on Earth? Simulations published in Nature back in 2017 suggest it would take a truly gigantic space rock to accomplish such a feat. Killing all life on Earth would require an impact that literally boils away oceans. And only asteroids like Pallas and Vesta, the solar system's largest, are big enough to do that. While there is evidence that infant Earth was struck by a large planetoid called Theia, these days, collisions of such large objects are extremely unlikely. Death by deoxygenation. Nearly 2.5 million years ago, a period called the Great Oxidation Event gave us the breathable atmosphere that we now all depend on. An eruption of cyanobacteria filled our atmosphere with oxygen, creating a world where multicellular life forms could take hold and where creatures like humans could ultimately breathe. However, one of Earth's great die-offs, an event 450 million years ago called the late Ordovician mass extinction, likely happened because the inverse took place. The planet saw a sudden drop in oxygen levels that lasted for several million years. During the Ordovician period, most life on Earth still lived in the oceans, but plants were beginning to emerge on land. Then, near the end of the Ordovician, a sweeping climate shift left the supercontinent covered with glaciers. That global cooling alone was enough to start killing off species. And a second pulse of the extinction ramped up as oxygen levels plummeted. Some researchers think that the glaciers were responsible for fundamentally changing the layers of the oceans, which had unique temperatures and specific concentrations of elements, like oxygen. More than 80% of life on Earth died during the late Ordovician mass extinction, according to some estimates. Could a similar deoxygenation event happen again? In an eerie parallel, researchers in a recent Nature Communications study say that climate change is already reducing oxygen levels in our oceans, potentially killing off marine species. Gamma ray burst extinction. Even if a sudden spate of global cooling sparked the late Ordovician mass extinction, what set that in motion in the first place? Over the years, numerous astronomers have suggested the culprit might have been gamma ray burst, or GRB. GRBs are mysterious events that seem to be the most violent and energetic explosions in the cosmos, and astronomers suspect they're tied to extreme supernovas. So far, GRBs have only been spotted in other galaxies. But if one did happen in the Milky Way, as has likely happened in the past, it could cause a mass extinction on Earth. A GRB pointed in our direction might last just 10 seconds or so, but it could still destroy at least half of Earth's ozone in that short period of time. Even a relatively small amount of ozone depletion is enough to chip away at our planet's natural sunscreen. Wiping out the ozone on a large enough scale could wreak havoc on food chains, killing off huge numbers of species. A GRB would wipe out the life forms that live in the upper levels of the ocean, which currently contribute significant amounts of oxygen to our atmosphere. And it turns out, gamma rays also break apart atmospheric oxygen and nitrogen. These gases get converted into nitrogen dioxide, more commonly known as the smog that blocks out the sun above heavily polluted cities. Having the smog blanketing the entire Earth would kickstart a global ice age. End of the sun. Gamma ray burst or not, most life on Earth will eventually die anyway due to a lack of oxygen, according to a study published last March in Nature Geoscience. The researchers suggest that our oxygen-rich atmosphere is not a permanent feature of the planet. Instead, in about a billion years, solar activity will cause atmospheric oxygen to plummet back down to the level that it was at before the great oxidation event. To determine this, the authors simulated what will happen to the atmosphere as the sun ages and puts out more energy. They found out that eventually, Earth reaches a point where atmospheric carbon dioxide breaks down. At that point, oxygen-producing plants and organisms that rely on photosynthesis will die out. Our planet won't have enough life forms to sustain the oxygen-rich atmosphere humans and other animals require. The precise timing of when that starts and how long it takes, the deoxygenation process could take as few as 10,000 years. Depends on a broad range of factors. But in the end, the authors say this cataclysm is an unavoidable one for the planet. Luckily, humanity still has another billion years to figure out other plans. We've run out of time for today's episode of Discover. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jory Slodke, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Discover is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call area code 919-832-5138. That number again is area code 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.